Welcome back to the Dear Katie podcast. This is Katie Kessner.
And this is Claire Kaplan. As a reminder to our listeners, sometimes the discussions in our podcast can bring up very painful issues and even painful memories for survivors of trauma. But even if you are a survivor, it can be difficult to hear. So please take care of yourself, your safety and well-being. Please reach out for emotional support from family or friends, a counselor if you have one, or a hotline. Additional resources may be found on the Take Back the Night Foundation website, and we'll share that address with you at the end of the podcast.
Thank you so much, Claire. And today we are pleased to welcome Ashley Ben Dixon. But we always kind of use our first names, Ashley, and welcome. And we always start also with a little brief bio of who you are, where you grew up, and a little bit about your background.
Sure. Hi, Katie and Claire. I'm truly so honored to be here. And I just have to say grateful that this podcast exists and for all the work that you've done, Katie. My name's Ashley, as you said. I am a proud survivor today of sexual assault, domestic violence, and all the complex trauma that goes along with that. I grew up in Massachusetts. I'm now living in Rhode Island. And I think just in a quick nutshell, my experiences totally transformed my life. It changed the trajectory of my career path and what I would be doing. And, you know, I really found purpose in everything that I went through. And today I actually speak full time. I speak in high schools, colleges across the U.S. I train law enforcement, service providers, the military. In fact, I even just spoke at a Take Back the Night event a few months ago. So very relevant here. And yeah, this is my mission now, is to be part of these conversations to end abuse using my story, as well as creating spaces like this in any community that I can. So very glad to be here.
Thanks. Yeah, absolutely. But a couple more quick questions, Ashley. So you grew up, and where did you go to high school and college, and what did you study? A little bit about that part of your life.
Sure. So I grew up near the Cape area of Massachusetts in a town called Fairhaven, and went to the local high school, very small, you know, rural community. And after high school, I went to a nearby college also in Massachusetts, a little bit closer to Boston. Part of my story, I was in a really abusive relationship, so I actually was forced by my partner to drop out of that school. And many years later, in the rebuilding of my life, I returned to school at Salve Regina University, which is in Newport, Rhode Island. And eventually by then, I had found my passion. And so I got my degree in what was called Administration of Justice. It's kind of like a criminal justice pre-law program. So that's what my bachelor's is in, is justice.
Oh, interesting.
Very helpful. Thanks so much, Ashley. And what about your family life growing up? Did you have siblings and two parents, or not so much?
Yep. So I had a very, at least looking back at the time, I thought I had a very normal home, as many of us do. I had a father who worked full time. He was an attorney. He had his own firm. And my mom was an awesome stay-at-home mom who loved that being her full-time job. She loved, you know, taking care of us and bringing us to dance classes and sewing up the ballet shoes. And so she was a very close role model in my life. And I'm the oldest of three girls. So I have two younger sisters, and we had a generally very healthy upbringing for all accounts. Yes.
Great. So thank you for that additional information, Ashley. And then, the always predictable question is, what brings you to your microphone on our program? You know, what's your survivor story?
Yeah.
Because you actually alluded to a few.
Yes. I think, like many survivors, you know, I experienced assault once, and it was really the beginning of a cycle of abuse and accepting situations that I thought was just normal, or thought I just had to accept. And so kind of just the background of my story, I was 14 years old when I was first assaulted. It was actually my very first boyfriend. I remember being so excited because it was actually my first high school dance. The first time a boy ever approached me, noticed me, asked me to dance. And I was on cloud nine. He was older, popular, played sports. I'd seen him around school. I couldn't believe that out of all the girls on the dance floor, he had just asked me to dance. And I was so excited when this happened. And eventually, he became my first boyfriend, asked for my phone number, and it was very innocent. I saw him at school, and we talked on the phone every night. That was it. I wasn't allowed to date, but my parents were okay with that. And there were no red flags. I didn't have any, gut feelings that anything could possibly go wrong until one day he started to heavily encourage me to lie to my parents so I could sneak out and actually spend more one-on-one time with him. And despite saying no to even just that, he kind of asked and asked until I felt like I had to. And eventually we did, meet up behind my parents' back on this secret date. And it was on that secret date and many others to follow where he, out of nowhere, really became extremely sexually abusive. It was very subtle in the beginning. It was confusing. He would say things like, if you cared about me, you'd want to do these things. Or why are you acting like that? Didn't we make plans to, be together today? And I really didn't know how to handle it. And so it was kind of small and a lot of coercive sexual activity in the beginning. But eventually it only got more aggressive and severe to the point where I would say the word no and he would force me anyway. I could have tears in my eyes and it wouldn't matter. And that was really the beginning of many other struggles in my life.
Let me go back to a couple things. Let's go back to this guy and why you liked him. Let's do it in order.
Yeah.
Let's start with this guy. Why did you like him? What were some of the first things that he did that made you want to comply with whatever he wanted? He started off, I would say, as, were you the aggressor ever? Or like, did you ever come on to him? Or you feel like he was always the one to come on to you? And if so, how did that go? And why did you comply?
Yeah, so I think I liked him. I was 14 and I had never been noticed by anybody before. Mm-hmm. And I think I felt excited, that this one boy took interest in me, thought I was intriguing, interesting, attractive. I had never really received that attention before. And, the more I got to know him, it was easy conversation. He made me laugh. I looked forward to every night after dinner when the phone would ring. So it really was just kind of a simple excitement and just enjoy.
But was it based on the way he talked to you, his appearance, his talents, his skills? Like, what were the delineations of, if you could, what did he have or do to make you excited?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think surface level, I thought he was super cute. I thought he was cute before he even said hello to me. I had seen him around school, so I was very attracted to him. That's for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was very complimentary. I think like many individuals, he made me feel very special early on. He would, say things like, I've never met anyone like you before, or I feel like I can tell you anything. It was kind of subtle love bombing where I really did feel even more special. Like he made me feel like we were meant to be from day one.
So that attention, especially from a boy, when you felt like you hadn't been, must have been pretty exciting.
It was. This is kind of coming off of, like I said, I was a girl who was never noticed previously, but I also had a lot of negative experiences in middle school where I can remember having this crush on a boy in eighth grade. He found out in the cafeteria and his friends found out at the same time and they all laughed at me. And I remember just feeling really defeated. Like they were basically laughing and saying like, gross, he would never date a girl like you. So I had a very low self-esteem and didn't really have much self-worth when it came to like me possibly being attractive or, desirable by somebody else at school. So it really kind of was this like magical moment that I never thought was going to happen.
And looking back, do you think that he had you pegged in a way as someone who, because A, you were inexperienced and B, because you really wanted some attention and you were kind of, that you were maybe a bit of a target?
You know, I'm really not sure. You know, I've thought a lot about this. Are there qualities in me that, you know, sometimes might have made me a little bit more of a target? I think at the time, you know, we were at the high school dance, and I think he just picked me out on the dance floor. And maybe as he got to know me, he might have realized that I was vulnerable and inexperienced, and perhaps that's why he stayed and I did become his target. But at first, I don't think that I let that on. So he likely discovered that as time went on.
Okay, thanks for that. And so he became sexually abusive to you. How long did that go on? And did you ever think about telling anybody?
Yeah, so our relationship was kind of on and off for the first 2 years of high school. So I would say, yes, the entirety of my freshman and sophomore year, even if we, you know, were no longer dating, he found ways to kind of come back into my life, show up. So I endured that for quite some time. And I did think, actually, no, let me backtrack on that. I remembered thinking that what I was going through was unique, and so hard to describe because it was confusing, because one minute he was abusive and then the next he was apologizing and being nice. And I often felt like even if I tried to talk to someone, no one could understand, because I really couldn't even understand any of it. I wasn't even sure if it was abuse. And, you know, on the other hand, I was so young and I didn't feel like I could tell my parents after I'd been lying and sneaking around. Back then, you know, didn't think that there was someone at school that I could talk to. We had academic guidance counselors. So I really just kind of felt alone. And I think I just chose to kind of keep it to myself and hope that in time things would just get better, or I'd figure it out as things went along.
You say he came back into your life. Mm-hmm. What did he do to insinuate himself back in?
Well, I mean, this was, you know, back in the early 2000s, and it was everything from him, you know, calling my parents' house just out of nowhere to check in and reconnect with me. He lived a few blocks away. So sometimes he would just show up outside my parents' house and, you know, he'd be knocking on my window, and somehow he just found ways to show up out of nowhere. So whether it was at school or even at my parents' home, he would just constantly resurface.
How did he interact with your two sisters, Ashley?
He really didn't. You know, they were younger. They were pretty insulated from all of it. But I think because I wasn't allowed to date, and my parents never actually saw him around the house, he would come by at night and sneak around. And my parents...
like at night, like at midnight? Like, I'm imagining, like, what was this?
Anything from like 8, 9 o'clock onward, like after dark.
Oh, wow.
Because he knew that I wasn't allowed to have him there. So, you know, my family really didn't see him coming by. And, you know, a little bit of context, my dad and my mom, they had some insight as to, like, I was dating this boy, and, you know, there were some prank phone calls at the house, and my parents never thought to ask me if there was something going on, if I was okay. You know, my behaviors had changed at that point, but I think that I was so afraid of always getting in trouble. Like, I knew that if my dad saw a boy outside the house, somehow I would get grounded for it. So I just would try to contain it and manage it. And, he'd knock on the window and I'd rush outside and try to just politely get him to leave before I got caught or got in trouble. So yeah, he kind of knew to come around and hide on his own because my parents weren't okay with it.
And so it sounds like because you were in this situation where you had to hide the relationship or the nature of the relationship, that essentially enforced your silence.
Yes, absolutely. And I think part of it too was that I was hurting and I felt so alone. And when nobody was really checking in or asking, that kind of compounded those feelings of being alone too. You know, no one seems to notice that I'm sad. My parents don't seem to notice that I've changed or I'm not okay. So yeah, I really did feel like no one sees it. So maybe I just keep it to myself and it's easier that way.
So how did you get out of the relationship? What ultimately happened?
Yeah, it really wasn't it wasn't by my doing. So he, at one point, just kind of started dating someone else, got into a committed relationship with another girl at school, and just kind of stopped talking to me. And he dated her long enough and didn't bother me long enough where I really kind of had the space to move on. And even then, it was very confusing. You know, I was so young. I had mixed feelings towards him. The days or weeks that he was nice, I was hoping that, you know, the boy on the dance floor was back. And so, you know, I think for a while I could have ended it, but I always hoped things would just get better. I wanted to believe when he apologized, but they didn't. So it only ended because he moved on. And then I was able to kind of have the space to really move on myself.
And did you come to some realization once he was away from you? Did you have any kind of clarity or insight into what was wrong in the relationship? Or did that not happen until later when you were, say, getting counseling?
Yeah, I think that, you know, like many victims, survivors, I didn't see myself as a victim of, you know, sexual assaults. I didn't take on that label, that identity. I just thought this is something different. This is something else. So many times I kind of just looked at this boyfriend and thought, he's a jerk sometimes. He is selfish, or, you know, it was like a constant eye roll. So I never really saw what he was doing as assault. And maybe that's because in many ways, you know, we see in the media and on TV kind of a very singular, narrow view of what sexual assault was. You know, you picture it being violent, an attack, someone you don't know. So I really didn't think that what I had gone through was assault. I thought this has to be something else. This is my boyfriend. We're just teenagers. You know, I came from a good home. These things don't happen to people like me. And I just had all the excuses to label it anything but what it was.
And then my question now is, as you just, you know, told us you're a national public speaker, what informs how you educate and what are you doing with that? You know, jumping forward a little bit. I want to hear about that, Ashley, but I also want to hear about, you know, your realization process on what that looked like. So two questions. One was, when did you come to understand this experience in its full light as abuse? And then what informs you in your education and speeches?
Yeah, so to kind of fast forward to when I was in college, I actually was studying
the first one or the second one. Remember, you told us you were at one, and
yes,
then
the first college, my first attempt. Yes, before I changed course and got on a better path. So my first attempt at college, I was studying nursing, and I was actually in a lecture hall where we had a guest speaker come in, and they were teaching us about domestic violence. And I was in a very abusive relationship at the time. And I remember sitting in my seat.
A different one than the one you just referenced?
Yeah.
Now we're on to another one.
Yes. Yeah. That the relationship.
Maybe we should go back and help our listeners understand how one led to the next.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, after that high school boyfriend and I split up, it was a challenging few years. I mean, I wasn't just, you know, suddenly lighter and healed and happy again. It was a rough few roads. But, you know, I remembered thinking that I had learned, thinking I'll never let this happen to me again. I'll never date someone like this again. But unfortunately, time and time again, I found myself in situations where I was assaulted. Sometimes they were one-time incidents, someone I trusted, someone I knew, that went too far. And at that point, I started to just accept that as maybe this is my life. Maybe this is just my fate. It just became so normal to me. And, when I got into college, I ended up meeting someone who, despite all I'd been through, he actually seemed like a dream come true. I met this boy and he was kind and supportive and patient, and we went on so many dates and he never pressured me. And I even told him about my experiences that I had gone through, and he listened. He shared his traumatic adolescent stories, and he felt like the person I was meant to know all along. And he felt like my dream ideal partner. But unfortunately, it very slowly and subtly started to change. He was, you know, a little bit jealous. He had some insecurities, and it became a very textbook domestic violence, dating violence relationship where he really wanted to control every aspect of my life. And that was while I was in college. And even I think at that point, I really began to ask myself the question, why me? Why is this happening again? It was just a constant story of like, I can't just find a healthy partner. And I just accepted it. And just like I had done at 14, I thought, well, I'll just keep waiting and keep hoping that things get better. And, you know, I'll accept another apology. But it was just the same story all over again.
Thank you. Yeah, Ashley, thank you for explaining that part. Go ahead, Claire.
So you're in your first college, mm-hmm. right? You're studying nursing, yes. And so you read the speaker, and it caused a shift. What was that shift, and what was it like?
Yeah, so I was sitting in my lecture hall, and I just remember looking up, and my life was on a PowerPoint slide. And in that moment, it was the first time I put words to what I was going through in that current moment was this term domestic violence. But, you know, everything they explained, it was my life. And I think it was the first time I finally started to look at that relationship objectively, now that I kind of had an understanding of what it was, and I could understand some of the tactics and the feelings that I had. And as much as I didn't, you know, instantly rush out of that class and go break up with my partner, that awareness was life-changing. It just gave me a sense of understanding that I never had before, that there was, you know, a term for this thing that I was going through. And unfortunately, it was just a matter of time before that boyfriend became physically abusive. And that was how I escaped, was after an attack. But it was after that relationship ended, I actually had to go to court. He was charged with assault. And it was at that moment of my life that I really just took a hard look at all of it. I was analyzing everything that this college boyfriend had just, overturned in my life. But suddenly I realized, you know, my whole life had been run by abusive, toxic partners and peers. And I started just kind of reflecting on, you know, from 14 years old to that moment, kind of how much I had lost. And I felt just fed up. You know, for whatever reason, something in me felt determined to just not repeat this again, to not find myself in another situation to end this cycle. And it was just a little mindset shift where I just no longer wanted to tolerate any of it. And that kind of began the beginning of me self-educating, learning, you know, what domestic violence is, what sexual assault is, feeling a little bit more empowered to say that what I went through was wrong and I was victimized. And I just kind of began to, reclaim my life from that day forward by teaching myself what this was, accepting it, and wanting to use that to rebuild and hopefully help others in the process too.
Wow. Huge change.
Yeah. Huge. I would definitely agree. Other than one speaker, Ashley, you know, what else helped you come to this conclusion?
That I was a victim, that I had gone through abuse and assault.
Both that and the desire to become a public speaker, an educator.
Well, I think that, I think I just found solidarity and validation the more that I learned and got involved in this work. I was a college dropout, homeless, penniless. I had nothing left after that college boyfriend. And I really didn't even know the first step to even take. But I do remember feeling like I couldn't believe that all those years I didn't know that I was going through something that was written about, studied, taught, that countless people had gone through. And I knew if I felt alone and couldn't identify, there must be other people like me. And so even though I didn't really know the direction I was heading in, I did know I wanted to be involved in some way. So I volunteered at my local domestic violence agency just to get engaged and learn more. And so through that, I was learning even more about abuse, hearing other people's stories. And it was actually that agency that asked me if I'd be willing to be a survivor speaker for what was Domestic Violence Awareness Month at the time. And I had never thought about speaking. I was so shy. I mean, the idea of telling my story, and especially telling a story that was so, it felt embarrassing at the time. You know, I didn't want people to know what I'd been going through, but I just thought, well, my story like can help others. I have to see my story as a tool. And so that's what I did. I shared my, I was terrified. I wrote every single word on 6 pieces of paper. I stood at a podium. I read it. I was shaking, but it was at that event afterwards, I was so afraid of what the audience had thought of my story. I thought I was going to be judged, but instead a lot of people came up and said, thank you. They shared their stories. And one woman said, you're a survivor. And I'd actually never even called myself that until that point. And so I just started to realize like the importance of sharing my story. And I was healing through telling my story. I felt lighter the second I told it. And I was really eager to see what else I could do by just being a voice.
Well, Ashley, to that point, what in your healing journey was the most traumatic and helpful?
I'll start with the most helpful. I spent, probably not by choice, but I spent so much time alone in those early days. I didn't have a vehicle at the time. I was walking to and from my waitressing job. I spent so much time with just me. And it actually turned out to be one of the most helpful things. I learned just to be with myself, to like my own company. I was reading personal development books. I was meditating. I was lying in the grass in a park. I was just kind of allowing myself to be silent and just kind of enjoy being with me and be grateful for the fact that I could take a walk to my job and not get reprimanded or, you know, just the each day I was just distancing myself from my old life. And so I think for me, the introspection, the quiet solo time, being in nature, being outdoors, that's been instrumental to me really healing. And then, of course, compound that with the speaking and the advocacy and volunteer work. That's been a big piece of it, too. As far as the most traumatic piece, I mean, I don't know if I'd use the word traumatic, but I think, you know, it's been scary at times to be vulnerable, because if anything, as a survivor, one of the things that I've adopted is this idea that being alone is safe. Because I know I won't betray me, I won't hurt me. And so I've had walls up at times, and I've really had to work to, you know, have trust, to be vulnerable, to let myself have needs and demands and not, you know, just try to be compliant and perfect and hope that that gets me the things I want. It's been a real journey in just learning that it's okay to be emotional. And yeah, it's ongoing, you know? So I think, yeah, just, kind of really not having walls up and allowing myself just to be me has been.
That wasn't what was hard though. I mean, I'm asking like with what you went through, Ashley, were there moments of real pain and darkness and failure or vulnerability that you thought like, I can't have I forget where we are. You are single or have a partner or children?
Today?
Yeah, at this moment.
No, I'm single. I'm in a relationship, but I'm not married. Oh. No children.
Okay. And so I guess like that's part of a lot of our survivors who come on the show who talk about what's hard and what's difficult and challenging to get to a place to have even a partner. Maybe we could talk about why you're in a relationship that's meaningful to you, your current one?
Sure. In the early years, it was not easy to have relationships. I was angry. I was very closed off. I didn't want to let people in. And I think it's just been a journey of, you know, trying to believe in trust and remind myself that my ex-partners were not representative of all partners mm-hmm. out there. And so it took me a long time, but I'm in the most beautiful relationship today.
Oh, yay! I'm sorry. I'm like exuberant about that one.
Wonderful.
Maybe we kind of conclude with that part is, I don't know, Claire, where should we land? I'm wondering. We've talked to so many survivors. Claire, what can we garner from Ashley?
Well, I would love to know, how did this partner come into your life and what was it about, I'm assuming him, I could be wrong, that was different, or that what had you learned so you knew to watch out for sort of red flags? And you know what I'm saying? It's like, how was this person different than the others?
I would say my partner now is a healthy partner for me because I am a healthy partner. I've done my own personal work to make sure that I'm ready for a committed, healthy relationship. You know, I didn't always make the smartest decisions. I sometimes dated recklessly. I didn't really care. I was just carefree. And, you know, I got to a point where I finally defined my own values. You know, I want a partner who's stable and trustworthy and present, and a partner who I can have messy days with and they still choose me and love me. And before, you know, the idea of being messy was I would rather run, you know? And so I think I've just done so much work to finally just be me again. And he just kind of showed up in my life, you know, at a time when I just felt really healed and felt like my past was no longer negatively impacting my relationships and my choices. And he just exudes everything I could possibly want in a long-term partner. And interestingly, he's one of the few partners I've had that was not attracted to my trauma story. Like, that's not why he loves me or finds me endearing. He just has kind of loved me for me from day one. And it's really allowed me to see myself as more than a survivor, because that's such a big part of my identity. But I'm also just Ashley. I was Ashley before all of this, and he loves me for me being Ashley. And I think that's been the most beautiful gift to experience that.
Thank you. That actually is very interesting. Yeah.
That's amazing. Claire, I'm not sure what else should we ask Ashley, maybe about what, you know, one or two things you think that are worthy of being an agent of change,
and what you would like the listeners to know
if you're trying to change things. I think that's what you're is your I go back to this, Ashley, is your main role right now being a public speaker?
Yes.
Okay, so if we had to say a learning outcome would be blank.
I think, you know, when I speak, the number one takeaway that I hope that people walk away with is that they're not alone. And yes, there's, you know, nuances to our stories and there's all these unique factors, but, you know, the common thread is being harmed and feeling just like no one can understand. And so I always hope that by the end of my talks, there's a sense of greater awareness, solidarity, and just kind of a little bit of like self-willingness that it's okay. And I can talk to someone and now take the step to go get further advice and support. I think it's just opening that door, planting that seed to let people know they're not alone. And from here forward, you can make changes. You can reach out for help. And it kind of just, that's what I hope I give people is just
got it.
Yeah.
But let me just imagine one thing, because that's relevant, what you just said, to a certain sector of an audience. But if you were in front of a mandatory orientation of college students or high school assembly for all the seniors who will not all be survivors like you, mm-hmm. they don't need to hear they're not alone because they don't even know what that means for the most part. So what would you say to them? Like a whole 1,000 people of random mandatory humans listening to your speech.
Yeah. So this is something I have to do because I give school-wide assemblies all the time. So, you know, one thing I always do is say, you know, for me, it was sexual assault. For you, it might be something else. I think, you know, we all face struggles in life and we all feel very alone and keep these things to ourselves and never seek help or healing. So I try to, you know, make it more universally applicable. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes to topics like sexual assault or domestic violence, the numbers are so high that there's a high likelihood, even if you don't experience it, you may know someone who does. And a lot of, you know, people have a friend who's been harmed or a friend who's in a toxic relationship and they don't always know what to do. So I think the greatest thing that we can do to start to reduce these issues is to just raise awareness and educate them. Because it's my belief that these issues are all around us. It's so prominent, but very few people talk about it. So I always try to give advice on, you know, what a friend can do. And really, it kind of comes back to, you know, for me, I think one of the things I lost early on was just trusting in my own intuition. I knew things were not always okay, but I just shut those feelings off. And I think we all just need to remember that if something doesn't feel right, it's okay to speak up. It's okay to say no. It's okay to use your voice. It's okay to, you know, set values and boundaries. And the quality of our lives are based on the quality of our interactions and our relationships. And so it's really about empowering people.
Thanks so much, Ashley. I think I love your reinforcement of gut and instinct and saying, you know, no one is isolated from the issue. That's so important. Claire, do you have any other questions for Ashley or we can close out?
I love hearing your story and I thank you for doing the work you're doing because it's so important.
So thank you for the whole interview. For everything that you offered. I know our listeners will be empowered and, you know, many will have resonance with all the things you said in our journey. And I will look forward to hopefully seeing you on YouTube or somewhere else. Do you have any YouTube interviews?
I do. Yep. I'm on YouTube and basically all the social medias.
Okay, perfect. And I know our listeners will find you to learn more about your journey. So thank you kindly for, you know, being on our show and sharing your own journey. And as we always do, we tell our listeners, there are tons of support resources on the Take Back the Night website, including the hotline. If you feel as though we can help you with legal advocacy, as well as other, you know, join us, participate with our free events, including our global virtual, which happens every October, as well as in April on the last Thursday evening every month. So please join us. Please continue to thrive, grow, and heal. So thank you again for joining us. And Ashley, my goodness, thank you for sharing your journey with our listeners.
Thank you, Katie, for all you do.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Take care and everyone onward and upward.